Chapter 11. The evening of the 5th of June, while the master's house was being constructed, Joam Garral was also busy in the arrangement of the outbuildings, comprising the kitchen, and offices in which provisions of all kinds were intended to be stored. In the first place, there was an important stock of the roots of that little tree, some 6 or 10 feet in height, which yields the manioc, and which form the principal food of the inhabitants of these intertropical countries. The root, very much like a long black radish, grows in clumps like potatoes. If it is not poisonous in Africa, it is certain that in South America it contains a more noxious juice, which it is necessary to previously get rid of by pressure. When this result is obtained, the root is reduced to flour, and is then used in many ways, even in the form of tapioca, according to the fancy of the natives. On board the Jangada there was a huge pile of this useful product destined for general consumption. As for preserved meats, not forgetting a whole flock of sheep, kept in a special stable built in the front, they consisted principally of a quantity of the Recinto hams of the district, which are of first-class quality, but the guns of the young fellows, and of some of the Indians, were reckoned on for additional supplies, excellent hunters as they were, to whom there was likely to be no lack of game on the islands, and in the forests bordering on the stream. The river was expected to furnish its daily quota, prawns, which ought rather to be called crawfish, ambergris, the finest fish in the district, of a flavor superior to that of salmon, to which it is often compared. Araricus with red scales, as large as sturgeons, which when salted are used in great quantities throughout Brazil. Anderus, awkward to capture, but good to eat, Arantas, or devil fish, striped with red bands, and 30 inches long, turtles large and small, which are counted by millions, and form so large a part of the food of the natives, some of every one of these things it was hoped would figure in turn on the tables of the master and his men. And so each day shooting and fishing were to be regularly indulged, inches, for beverages they had a good store of the best that country produced, a sumer, a chachara, from the upper and lower Amazon, an agreeable liquor of slightly acidulated taste, which is distilled from the boiled root of the sweet manioc, iju, from Brazil, a sort of national brandy, the jica of Peru. The mazado of the Ucayali, extracted from the boiled fruits of the banana tree, pressed and fermented. Uarana, a kind of paste made from the double almond of the Alinea sorbilis, a genuine tablet of chocolate so far as its color goes, which is reduced to a fine powder, and with the addition of water yields an excellent drink. And this was not all. There is in these countries a species of dark violet wine, which is got from the juice of the palm, and the aromatic flavor of this sais is greatly appreciated by the Brazilians, and of it there were on board a respectable number of frasks, each holding a little more than half a gallon, which would probably be emptied before they arrived at Para. The special cellar of the Jangada did honor to Benito, who had been appointed its commander-in-chief. Several hundred bottles of sherry, port, and lechable recalled names dear to the earlier conquerors of South America. In addition, the young butler had stored away certain demijohns, holding half a dozen gallons each, of excellent afia, a sugared brandy a trifle more pronounced in taste than the national biju. As far as tobacco was concerned, there was none of that coarse kind which usually contents the natives of the Amazonian basin. It all came direct from Villa Bella da Imperatriz, or, in other words, Fro, the district in which is grown the best tobacco in Central America. The principal habitation, with its annexes kitchen, offices, and cellars was placed in the rear, or, let us say, stern of the craft, and formed a part reserved for the Garral family and their personal servants. In the center the huts for the Indians and the blacks had been erected. The staff were thus placed under the same conditions as at the fazenda of Iquitos, and would always be able to work under the direction of the pilot. To house the crew, a good many huts were required, and these gave to the Jangada the appearance of a small village got adrift, and, to tell the truth, it was a better built and better peopled village than many of those on the upper Amazon. For the Indians, Joam Garral had designed regular cabins, huts without walls, with only light poles supporting the roof of foliage. The air circulated freely throughout these open constructions, and swung the hammock suspended in the interior, and the natives, among whom were three or four complete families, with women and children, were lodged as if they were on shore. The blacks here found their customary sheds. They differed from the cabins by being closed in on their four faces, of which only one gave access to the interior. The Indians, accustomed to live in the open air, free and untrammeled, were not able to accustom themselves to the imprisonment of the Ajaupas, which agreed better with the life of the blacks. And the bow regular warehouses had arisen, containing the goods which Joam Garral was carrying to Belém at the same time as the products of his forests. There, in vast storerooms, under the direction of Benito, the rich cargo had been placed with as much order as if it had been carefully stowed away in a ship's hold. In the first place, 7,000 arrobas of caoutchouc, each of about 30 pounds, composed the most precious part of the cargo, for every pound of it was worth from 3 to 4 francs. The Jangada also took 50 hundredweight of sarsaparilla, a smilax which forms an important branch of foreign trade throughout the Amazon districts, and is getting rarer and rarer along the banks of the river, so that the natives are very careful to spare the stems when they gather them. Tonquin bands, known in Brazil under the name of humerus, and used in the manufacture of certain essential oils, sassafras, from which is extracted a precious balsam for wounds, bales of dying plants, cases of several gums, and a quantity of precious woods, completed a well-adapted cargo for lucrative and easy sale in the provinces of Para. Some may feel astonished that the number of Indians and Negroes embarked were only sufficient to work the raft, and that a larger number were not taken in case of an attack by the riverside Indians. Such would have been useless. The natives of Central America are not to be feared in the least, and the times are quite changed since it was necessary to provide against their aggressions. The Indians along the river belong to peaceable tribes, and the fiercest of them have retired before the advancing civilization, and drawn further and further away from the river and its tributaries. Negro deserters, escaped from the penal colonies of Brazil, England, Holland, or France, are alone to be feared. But there are only a small number of these fugitives. They only move in isolated groups across the savannas or the woods, and the Jangada was, in a measure, secured from any attack on the parts of the backwoodsmen. On the other hand, there were a number of settlements on the river towns, villages, and missions. The immense stream no longer traverses a desert, but a basin which is being colonized day by day. Danger was not taken into consideration. There were no precautions against attacks. To conclude our description of the Jangada, we have only to speak of one or two erections of different kinds which gave it a very picturesque aspect. In the bow was the cabin of the pilot, we say in the bow, and not at the stern, where the helmsman is generally found. In navigating under such circumstances, a rudder is of no use. Long oars have no effect on the raft of such dimensions, even when worked with 100 sturdy arms. It was from the sides, by means of long boat hooks or props thrust against the bed of the stream, that the Jangada was kept in the current, and had its direction altered when going astray. By this means they could range alongside either bank, if they wished for any reason, to come to a halt. 3 or 4 ubas, and 2 pirogues, with the necessary rigging, were carried on board, and afforded easy communications with the banks. The pilot had to look after the channels of the river, the deviations of the current, the eddies which it was necessary to avoid, the creeks or bays which afforded favorable anchorage, and to do this, he had to be in the bow. If the pilot was the material director of this immense machine, for can we not justly call it so? Another personage was its spiritual director. This was Padre Pisana, who had charge of the mission at Iquitos. A religious family, like that of Joam Garrels, had availed themselves enthusiastically of this occasion of taking him with them. Padre Pisana, then aged 70, was a man of great worth, full of evangelical fervor, charitable and good, and in countries where the representatives of religion are not always examples of the virtues, he stood out as the accomplished type of those great missionaries who have done so much for civilization in the interior of the most savage regions of the world. For 50 years Padre Pisana had lived at Iquitos, in the mission of which he was the chief. He was loved by all, and worthily so. The Garrel family held him in great esteem. It was he who had married the daughter of Farmer Magalha S. to the clerk who had been received at the fazenda. He had known the children from birth. He had baptized them, educated them, and hoped to give each of them the nuptial blessing. The age of the padre did not allow of his exercising his important ministry any longer. The horn of retreat for him had sounded. He was about to be replaced at Iquitos by a younger missionary, and he was preparing to return to Para, to end his days in one of those convents which are reserved for the old servants of God. What better occasion could offer than that of descending the river with the family which was as his own? They had proposed it to him, and he had accepted, and when arrived at Belém he was to marry the young couple, Minha and Manel. But if Padre Pisana during the course of the voyage was to take his meals with the family, Joam Garrel desired to build for him a dwelling apart, and heaven knows what care Yaquita and her daughter took to make him comfortable. Assuredly the good old priest had never been so lodged in his modest parsonage. The parsonage was not enough for Padre Pisana. He ought to have a chapel. The chapel then was built in the center of the jangada, and a little bell surmounted it. It was small enough, undoubtedly, and it could not hold the whole of the crew, but it was richly decorated, and if Joam Garrel found his own house on the raft, Padre Pisana had no cause to regret the poverty-stricken church of Iquitos. Such was the wonderful structure which was going down the Amazon. It was then on the bank waiting till the flood came to carry it away. From the observation and calculation of the rising it would seem as though there was not much longer to wait. All was ready to date, the 5th of June. The pilot arrived the evening before. He was a man about 50, well up in his profession, but rather fond of drink. Such as he was, Joam Garrel in large matters at different times had employed him to take his rafts to Belém, and he had never had cause to repent it. It is as well to add that Araujo, that was his name, never saw better than when he had imbibed a few glasses of tafia, and he never did any work at all without a certain demijohn of that liquor, to which he paid frequent court. The rise of the flood had clearly manifested itself for several days. From minute to minute the level of the river rose, and during the 24 hours which preceded the maximum the waters covered the bank on which the raft rested, but did not lift the raft. As soon as the movement was assured, and there could be no error as to the height to which the flood would rise, all those interested in the undertaking were seized with no little excitement. For if through some inexplicable cause the waters of the Amazon did not rise sufficiently to flood the jangada, it would all have to be built over again. But as the fall of the river would be very rapid, it would take long months before similar conditions recurred. On the 5th of June, toward the evening, the future passengers of the jangada were collected on a plateau which was about 100 feet above the bank, and waited for the hour with an anxiety quite intelligible. There were Yaquita, her daughter, Manuel Valdez, Padre Pisana, Benito, Lina, Fragoso, Cybele, and some of the servants, Indian or Negro, of the fazenda. Fragoso could not keep himself still. He went and he came, he ran down the bank, and ran up the plateau, he noted the points of the river gauge, and shouted, "Hurrah!" as the water crept up. "It will swim, he shouted. the raft which is to take us to Belem. It will float if all the cataracts of the sky have to open to flood the Amazon. Joam Garral was on the raft with the pilot and some of the crew. It was for him to take all the necessary measures at the critical moment. The jangada was moored to the bank with solid cables, so that it could not be carried away by the current when it floated off. Quite a tribe from 150 to 200 Indians, without counting the population of the village, had come to assist at the interesting spectacle. They were all keenly on the watch, and silence reigned over the impressionable crowd. Toward 5 o'clock in the evening the water had reached a level higher than that of the night before by more than a foot, and the bank had already entirely disappeared beneath the liquid covering. A certain groaning arose among the planks of the enormous structure, but there was still wanting a few inches before it was quite lifted and detached from the ground. For an hour the groanings increased. The joists grated on all sides. A struggle was going on in which little by little the trunks were being dragged from their sandy bed. Toward 6:30 cries of joy arose. The jangada floated at last, and the current took it toward the middle of the river, but, in obedience to the cables, it quietly took up its position near the bank at the moment that Padre Pasanta gave it his blessing, as if it were a vessel launched into the sea whose destinies are in the hands of the Most High. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.